Hey, today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, Three Modes of Material Nature. Text number 3. Can somebody turn that down a little bit, please, so there's no echo? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. Okay. That's good, thank you. Mama Yonir Mahat Brahma. Mama Yonir Mahat Brahma. Tasmin garbham dadam yaham. Tasmin garbham dadam yaham. Sambhava sarva bhutanam. Sambhava sarva bhutanam. Tato bhavati bharata. Tato bhavati bharata. Mama yonir mahad brahma. Tasmin garbham dadamyam. Sambhava sarva bhutanam. Tato bhavati bharata. Mama yonir mahad brahma. Tasmin garbham dadhamyam. Sambhava sarva bhutanam. Tato bhavati bharata. Mayodhir mahabrahma. Tasmin garbham dadhamyam. Sambhava sarva bhutanam. Tato bhavati bharata. Nama yonir mahad brahma. Asmim garbham didam yahum. Mohinir Mahan Brahma. Tasmin garbham dadam yaham. Sambhava sarva bhutanam. Tato bhavati bharata. Ladies. Mahajohir Mahabrahma. Tasmin garbham. Sambhava sarva bhutanam. Tato bhavati bharata. Mahayonir mahad bhavma. Tasmin garbham dadam yaham. Sambhava sarva bhutanam. Tato bhavati bharata. Mama. My. Yoni. Source of birth. Mahat. The total material existence. Brahma. Supreme. Tasmin. In that. Garbham. Pregnancy. Dadami. Create. Aham. I. Sambhava. The possibility. Sarvabhutanam. Of all living entities. Tata. Thereafter. Bhavati. Becomes. Bharata. O son of Bharata. Translation, the total material substance called Brahman is the source of birth, and it is at Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings. O son of Bharata. Purport. This is an explanation of the world. Everything that takes place is due to the combination of the Chaitra and Chaitragya. the body and the spirit soul. This combination of material nature and the living entity is made possible by the Supreme God himself. The Mahatattva is the total cause of the total cosmic manifestation, and that total substance of the material cause, in which there are three modes of nature, is sometimes called Brahman. The Supreme Personality impregnates that total substance, and thus innumerable universes become possible. This total material substance, the Mahatattva, is described as Brahman in the Vedic literature, Mundaka Upanishad 1.1.19. Tasmaditad Brahman Namarupa Anamcha Jayate. The Supreme Person impregnates that Brahman with the seeds of the living entities. The 24 elements, beginning from the earth, water, fire, and air, are all material energy, and they constitute what is called the Mahat Brahma, or the great Brahman, the material nature. As explained in the 7th chapter, beyond this, there is another superior nature, the living entity. Into material nature, the superior nature is mixed by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thereafter all living entities are born of this material nature. The scorpion lays its eggs in piles of rice, and sometimes it is said that the scorpion is born from the rice. But the rice is not the cause of the scorpion. Actually, the eggs were laid by the mother. Similarly, the material nature is not the cause of the birth of the living entities. The seed is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they only seem to come out as products of the material nature. Thus, every living entity, according to his past activities, has a different body created by this material nature, so that the entity can enjoy or suffer according to his past deeds. The Lord is the cause of all the manifestations of the living entities in this material world. Om Ganatam Anandasya Ganansana Shalakaya Chakshin Militamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavisam Sapitam Ina Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapatantikam. The total material substance, called Brahman, is the source of birth, and that Brahman, it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings. O son of Bharat. Why is Krishna saying this here? Beginning of 14th chapter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Again, I shall declare to you this supreme wisdom, the best of all knowledge, knowing which all the sages have attained to the supreme destination." So Krishna starts out by indicating that he's going to give the supreme wisdom. And Prabhupada very interesting says in the purport that this information is beyond everything that's been so far explained in Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is going to make it clear what the source of everything is. In the next verse, we'll just give a sneak preview. It should be understood that all species of life are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. So he repeats that, that I impregnate the Brahman, making possible the births of all living entities. And then again, I am the seed-giving father. So Krishna is making it clear that he's responsible for all the living beings being born into this material world. So in this verse in purport, the word Brahman comes up. And for those who are, let's say, new to Bhagavad Gita, this word can create a lot of confusion. So we have Brahman, Brahmana, Brahmajyoti, etc. And so we should understand clearly this word, Brahman, the root means spirit. So spiritual, anything spiritual is referred to as Brahman. And sometimes even loosely used in that way. Here, Krishna's talking about the total material substance being called Brahman. But elsewhere, we read about Brahman being the personal bodily effulgence of the Supreme Lord. Back in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks, what is Brahman? And there Krishna says, Brahman is all the living entities. And here, Brahman is the total material substance. So that sounds a little contradictory. And here, in the word for word, Mamayonir Mahat Brahma. And there, Brahma, Prabhupada gives the word for word as supreme, and Mahat, the total material existence. So the point, actually, that we want to understand from this is that Krishna is the source of all the living entities, and it is by his arrangement that they are being born into this material world. Okay? As Prabhupada says in the purport, that there's two things. There's the Chaitra and the Chaitragya, or the field and the knower of the field. And so the field is the material energy. The knower of the field is all the jivas, all the living entities who are using this place as a field for their activities. So the Brahman, earlier, in the 8th chapter, like we said, Krishna describes that the Brahman is the living entities. Now this reminds me of the Isopanishad. I think we spoke about this before. In text number 16, or is it 17? I think it's text number 17. Way down at toward the end of this long purport. Maybe it's 16. Give me a second to look there. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Sorry, I thought I could put my finger right on it. But it's in Isopanishad. Huh. Here in the purport to 16, Prabhupada writes, the all-pervading feature of the Lord, which exists in all circumstances. So that's the Mahatattva, or Brahman. Which exists in all circumstances of waking and sleeping, as well as in the potential states, and from which the Jiva Shakti, the living force, is generated, as both the conditioned and the liberated souls, is known as Brahman. So, the idea there is Brahman is actually the source of all the conditioned souls, both the conditioned souls and the liberated souls. After being born into the Brahman, then the jivas, all the living beings, they go to the tattvastha region, which is the dividing line between the material and spiritual worlds. And there, they get the chance to, or the opportunity to make a choice where they want to go. And all of us, we have chosen to come to the material side. Others, they can go directly to the spiritual side. So, Brahman is the living beings. And the source of them is Krishna. This is the point here. And Krishna is saying that I am the source of Brahman. He says, it is that Brahman that I impregnate. So how does Krishna impregnate the Brahman? To impregnate means to inject the living being. So actually the semen of the male contains the spirit souls. The egg of the female is inert until the jiva enters that with half of the chromosomes and so on. So in the same way, the Krishna, he's impregnating, that is, he's injecting the living beings into the Brahman. So they're emanating from his body in this way. They go to the Brahman, then they go to the tattvastha region, and then to the material world, and so on. Once we come to this material world, then we're under the control of Krishna's external energy, known as Mahamaya. And part of that external energy is the gunas, or the modes of material nature. So this verse and purport are trying to explain actually where the living beings come from. And it would appear as though the living beings are just born from nature. And Prabhupada is giving the example of the scorpion laying its eggs in the rice, and it appears the scorpions come out of the rice. So the material scientists are doing this crazy business now. What did I read recently? They've generated a male sperm cell from stem cells. And of course, who knows all kind of crazy things they're creating in the laboratory. It's basically a Jurassic Park. Actually, they're trying to do that too. they put together some DNA from some reptile, from dinosaur eggs, and they're going to try to recreate some of the dinosaurs. So it's going to be an interesting future. Prabhupada, when he was talking about the dinosaurs one time, he said, that's not where we've come from. He said, that's where we're going. And little did he know. At that time, there was no such thing as DNA and all this stuff. So Prabhupada, of course, is right on the mark. Anyway, the foolish material scientists, they think that everything is simply born out of matter. But not all scientists. Actually, I was reading just this last week, there's a very famous biologist, and he wrote a book called Biocentrism. Anybody hear of that? Yes. So biocentrism, he's actually very clearly, he says that science is like talking all about this fantastic creation, but they're missing the whole point of consciousness. And he's very clearly saying that science is at a dead end until we address the point of consciousness. So very interesting that a prominent scientist is doing that. Actually, he's got another book, the follow-up book coming out now, just next month, I think, called Beyond Biocentrism. So, which scientist? Now you're challenging my memory. Bruce Lipton? Might be, I don't know. No, I don't think so. I don't think it's Bruce Lipton, no. Anyway, so there's some scientists that have a little bit of a brain. There's another one also. But anyway, there's several who are making this point. And so maybe there's some hope for some scientists anyway. But, that, you know, otherwise to think that matter comes from life is ludicrous. In the United States about 20 years ago, there was a whole bunch of books that were maybe between 20 and 30 years ago. A number of books came out on the topic of intelligent design. Anybody read any of these books? You're the scientist too. Okay. So intelligent design means that if you analyze the, what's going on inside the body, you cannot help but come to the conclusion that it was created by an intelligent designer. And you can take an example of a simple machine like a bicycle. If all the parts of the bicycle are assembled properly, it makes a machine that works and performs a particular function. And each of those individual parts, however, only has a specific function in relationship to the entire machine. By themselves, they have no specific purpose. So Darwin's theory is that successive genetic mutations, one after the other, that they created, you know, they made the some or other just the right changes so that the machine could develop. But the point that the intelligent designers say is that, well, this part, what's it called? It's going to give a some kind of benefit. What's it called? Advantage. In other words, if there is some change in the genetic code, then there is some advantage in that life form then will continue to multiply because it has an advantage over the other life forms. Okay? So, he said, but some of these biological parts, in and of themselves, they give no advantage. Therefore, the idea of intelligent design disproves Darwin's theory. So that's all really that they're saying, is that Darwin's theory of survival of the fittest cannot be true because of what we know of biology now. Shows that has to be intelligent design, that there's a number of parts that were made separately and assembled together for the whole thing to work. So they give there's a really far out book called The Black Box. What is it? By Michael Behe, is a mathematician. Darwin's Black Box? No, not Darwin's Black Box. Somebody, sorry, I'm not remembering all these things. Anyway, he's a mathematician, and he gives many examples. One is of hemoglobin or blood clotting, that there's a number of features in the blood that cause it to coagulate if there's a cut. But if there's no cut, somehow or other, there's no coagulation and the blood continues to flow in the veins. So with modern biology, with what's called molecular biology now, they can see inside and they can understand all the things that are going on that they couldn't understand in Darwin's time. In Darwin's time, the most powerful microscope, if you look at a human cell, it just looked like a blob of jello. And they didn't really know what it was. And so they, you know, it wasn't too difficult to say, okay, yes, well, there was evolution for this. You know, jello is not too difficult to evolve, right? But with modern molecular biology, they can look inside an individual cell and identify all of the individual parts. And every one cell in our body is as complex as a city of a million people with all the things coming and going, right? How many people in Ljubljana? 300,000. So three times the size of the city, right? An average cell is that complex. All the people coming and going, things going on, huh? One cell. And so when you think of, can this develop by chance? It's impossible. Moreover, they've been able to take apart all the building blocks of the cell, and they know that in each cell, there's at least 1,000 different proteins. So proteins are chains of amino acids, and there's 21 amino acids, right? And so each protein has a specific construction of these 21 amino acids. And so if the average protein is something like, what is it, minimum of 125 amino acids, and you have 21 choices in each slot. And so what are the chances of developing just one protein by the chance combination of amino acids? Well, you can figure this out by statistics, and it's not very difficult to understand. But the chances of developing even one protein, if you speculate that the Earth was covered by a sea of amino acids, maybe a kilometer deep, and the amino acids are bumping into each other by chance combination, something like 10 every second, or even one a second, something like that, then how long would it take for one protein to assemble like that by chance? Well, the answer is something like 1 divided by 10 raised to the 125th power. So 10 raised to the 125th power is a very, very, very small number. Okay? It's like 0.00000125 times 1. I'm sorry, no, the other way. 10 raised to the 125th power is, so 10 with 125 zeros after that. And then 1 divided by that, which is the same, right? 0.00000. You with me? Did I confuse you all with that? Anyway, it's a very, very small number. Now, statistically, the scientists, they understand the science of what they call probability by statistics, and they can tell you that, frankly, it's not a small possibility that this happened by chance. Actually, the fact is that anything with odds less than 1 over 10 raised to the 50th power is impossible. Cannot happen. Okay? And this one is 1 over 10 to the 125th power. Now, let's look at the probability of assembling a whole cell, one cell, an average-sized cell, right, with 1,000 different proteins. What are the chances of doing that? Well, the fellow who discovered the DNA strand, Joseph Crick, he won a Nobel Prize for that, so he's a very smart fellow. And so he calculated that the possibility of one average-sized cell developing by chance is 1 divided by 10 raised to the 360 millionth power. Okay? So 10 times 360 million zeros after it, right? Huge, huge number beyond comprehension. And 1 divided by that. So flatly impossible. So Joseph Crick, being a honest scientist, actually he publicly stated that life did not arise from matter. It didn't come, actually did not develop on this planet. And his conclusion is that life came from somewhere else in the universe. That's our philosophy also. That life was generated by the Prajapatis and Lord Brahma. They have a name for this. This is called transpermia. Or the transfer of sperm from somewhere else. Anyway, there's a lot of books that came out for intelligent design around the late 90s. Many books, which are arguing from all different kinds of directions about how evolution could not happen. One of them was Icons of Evolution. And you know, when they're teaching evolution in the schools, they always use certain icons, like to show that the embryo of a human being is like the embryo of a fish or of a squirrel or something like that, you know. So all the embryos, they look at it the same way at a certain stage of their development. Well, those icons actually do not represent what is actually the fact. In other words, they're lying. They're flat out lying about what they put in the book. Another one they show is, of course, small horses and then bigger horses and then bigger horses, right? Giving the idea that there's evolution of these horses from one to the other. But in every case, they have no intermediate link, the so-called missing link, to show that one is actually evolved from another one. So the whole thing is a whole pack of lies. What are some of the other ones? It's 15 years ago or more. I can't remember them all. Anyway, I've got a big file of notes that I made on that. If anybody's interested in studying that or researching it, come and see me. So, anyway, the point is, life cannot arise from matter, even scientifically speaking. Which the scientists, if we're going to be honest, the scientists are not being scientific. They're denying what their own science shows them because they have a preconceived notion, or rather a political agenda that they want to prove. There's another honest scientist. His name is Richard Lewontin. He's a biophysicist or something like that, biochemist. And he wrote a book, Biology as Ideology. And in this book, he's very, very clearly stating that what passes for science today is not science, but actually it's an ideology that the scientists are trying to present. Why? Because they have the authority in modern society and they can say anything that they want and people will accept it. And he even gives the example of homosexuality being a genetic disposition. Now, he says, actually, this has no basis in fact. There's nothing scientific that can support this. But because a bunch of scientists decided that they were going to say these things, it becomes accepted as a scientific fact. It's not a fact at all, but it's propaganda. It's ideology. So the point is, you can't trust anything science says anymore. Don't believe them. Nothing. They're all liars. Maybe not all, but It's, they're like car mechanics. Half of them are liars, and the other half don't know what they're doing. So, anyway, I'm just rambling on. Krishna is the source of all living entities. He's the seed-giving father. That's the purport. Let me read the next verse, because they're so similar in nature. We'll just cover both of these today. Text number 4. Savriyo nishu konteya murtaya sambhavantiya dasambhama mahadyonir ambija padapita. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. Purport. In this verse, it is clearly explained that the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the original father of all living entities. The living entities are combinations of the material nature and the spiritual nature. Such living entities are seen not only on this planet, but on every planet, even on the highest, where Brahma is situated. Everywhere there are living entities. Within the earth there are living entities. Within, even within water, within fire. All of these appearances are due to the mother material nature and Krishna's seed-giving process. The purport is that the material world is impregnated with living entities who come out in various forms at the time of creation according to their past deeds. This is interesting. I used to have a file. I probably can't find these things anymore. This is, some of this is from before the day of computers. And there is one... I collected a press clipping from the scientists saying they discovered life, some little thing that could live in hot boiling sulfuric acid. So normally you'd think that such an environment would destroy anything that could live, but they found it there. And I had another press clipping of the scientists discovering life in the stratosphere, which is the very practically next to outer space, where there's atmosphere is very thin, but they found somehow or other they came upon something living way up there. And the most bizarre little form of life that I came across was when I was a graduate student. For my research, what I was doing was polishing metal and looking at the transformation of the grains. So metals are all composed of little crystals. Okay, a lot of them all stuck together. And you're a real scientist, huh? No. So they're all stuck together. And my research was to look and see how they evolve or how they change. So we were doing some lab work of polishing some piece of metal, taking a picture, but polishing it some more. And in this way, very gradually, looking at the three-dimensional structure or the topography of all of these crystals. So one of the specimens that we were looking at, there was a void, or what would have been called an air bubble, right? And very, very small. You couldn't even see it with your eye if you looked at the thing. But under the microscope, it just looks like a black hole. So I was in the laboratory late one night. Did you get that song here? I was working in the lab late one night when suddenly, to my surprise, no? Boris Karloff? Anyway, there was a song like that many years ago in America. Anyway, I was working in the laboratory, and I was looking at this metal through the microscope. And it's a little bitty hole. Like I said, you couldn't even see it with your eye, with your naked eye. But I could see crawling out of this thing a little spider. I was looking at it maybe at 100 times magnification. So in that field, the spider was, you know, I mean, it must have been practically, you know, who knows how big, you know, not even a hundredth of a millimeter. And I was watching and it was crawling around and I was trying to follow it like that. I was thinking I should go over to the biology laboratory and help them, you know, I've discovered a new life form. Because what we did with this metal, before we put it under the microscope, we would polish it and then we would etch it with an acid. And so in this way, by the etching of the acid, you could tell the different crystals of the metal. So this little critter was down there hanging out. How did he get there? Because to make that metal, right, that piece of metal, what we were doing is we put a piece of aluminum in the furnace, then we took it out and smashed it up a bunch of times, put it back in the furnace, smashed it up a bunch of times, did that about 5 or 6 times. And then we were polishing it, right? So how'd this little thing get in there? Did he go through the furnace and all the smashing all the times? Or did he crawl in there when the metal was being put in the acid bath? Complete mystery. Anyway, the point is, as Prabhupada is saying there, there's life everywhere. Under the earth there's life, in the stratosphere there's life, in the water there's life, everywhere there's life. So there must also be life on other planets. There is life on other planets. Okay, I'll be quiet. Any comments or questions? Yes. You didn't see the NASA photos? They found the buildings. Some people think that way. The intelligent design, if there's anybody into scientific preaching, you really have to know about intelligent design. There's so much evidence there, and because it contradicts the atheistic agenda, this became a big, big fight in the United States over what they're going to teach in the high schools, because they had to teach, you know, some explanation of where life comes from. And so the scientists, this is good science, intelligent design. But, you know, when you challenge their atheistic paradigm, these so-called scientists, they become wretched fiends. They start, you know, cursing you and blaspheming, and they just they go crazy. They come up with all kind of ad hominem attacks, attacking the researcher rather than the science. It just goes to show that they have a belief system of atheism. And if you challenge their belief system, ooh, they're worse than a Pentecostal. They go crazy. Yeah.
I have a question. In Bhagavad Gita, it says Krishna, you know, and life and living.
Krishna what?
That Krishna is the life and living.
Well, the life of the living.
Yes. And the life and living. It's mentioned by the Gita. And, yes.
I'm the seed-giving father of all living entities?
Yes.
Like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Once I attended the conference that kind of challenged scientists and kind of spiritual healing Chinese tradition medicine people. So there was one person that gave an explanation how she, like prana or, you know, also energetic parts, is transferred from mother and father to baby. So he's like explaining this point. And then the next scientist is trying to present how they clone the sheep, Dolly, you know? So I was like trying to figure out how, you know, how the soul actually entered, what made it possible for this sheep that was cloned to live, you know?
Okay. So the question is basically, where does the life enter? Because we have such things as cloning now. And In cloning, there's no insemination, right? They take. Don't they take? Do they take the embryo from one? Anyway, Prabhupada more or less he answered that in a simple way. He said, "If you build a nice house, somebody will move in." So, the idea is, if the scientists create some suitable house, a body that's inhabitable, somebody will move in. How they get there, I guess it would have a lot to do with their karma. Especially if it's a clone or something like that. Now they want to do designer babies, right? Where you can select all the different traits for your child. Or, the more newest one is they want to take different traits from a number of different people, 3 or 4 or 5 people. So they can take your eyes and your hair and, right, and your complexion and put them all together like this. They're mad. They're absolutely insane. So, of course, there's a lot of ethical discussion about should this be done, should this be allowed. But, of course, they're Maya Pritigyana, those whose knowledge have been stolen by illusion. And therefore, they'll do anything that they can. They have no basis, they have no moral rudder, no basis of understanding what should be done or what should not be done. In general, because of Tamagun, they do what should not be done. So I think we will see dinosaurs again. Not too distant future, yeah.
They are doing a research about Buddhist monks, how they control their chi in the body.
Uh-huh.
And there was one picture about them, they were holding hands, and one was cold and one was warm. And they say, like, this chi is the force energy.
The force energy?
Like,
okay. Life of the body is coming from the chi.
Yeah.
So this sounds like Buddhist. The Buddhists, as far as I know, they don't accept the idea of a soul, of an individual soul. Their idea is that they would all merge into Brahman. That everything is Brahman. That the one became somehow or other, you know, manifested all this differentiation, all these different things. But they don't answer the philosophical point that if the Brahman has nothing, there's no distinguishing characteristics, where does form come from? Where does personality come from? Where does light come from? Where does darkness come from? They can't answer such questions. So they don't even address them at all. They just skip them. They say, right, like you're saying, life or the life energy is coming from the chi. Well, that's, they don't go far enough, right? They could go farther and say, oh, where's the chi come from? Why do you stop at chi? There's some scientists that do that kind of work. There's one woman in Florida, Barbara Brennan. She is a physicist. But as a child, she could see auras. And so she developed a school for being able to see auras. In her school, she teaches the students they can see disease in the body before it becomes manifest physically. So they see it first in the subtle body, and they can cure it there, and then the person never gets sick at all. So very interesting approach. So they're going beyond the chi. They're seeing, you know, and they show 7 different layers of the subtle body. Anyway, my point is that there's, you can always go trace this back, cause and effect, cause and effect, cause and effect. So the chi is, they're saying the chi is the cause, but what's the cause of the chi? And you can look at the cause of the chi and you can trace this back even, scientifically, or according to the subtle science, like Barbara Brennan. But ultimately, you're going to come to the Atma. Because when the Atma is gone, the Jiva, then all the chi is gone also. All the aura is gone. Everything is gone because that's coming. That's where it's coming from.
What are the arguments against this intelligent design? Or what they say that they're not valid?
No, they become fanatical. Yeah, they just said no. It's religion, because the scientists who were doing this were Christians, so they say this is not good science, but it is good science. For example, you know, Joseph Crick, by statistics, also our Sariputta Prabhu, he wrote one treatise called "Demonstration by Information Theory that Life Cannot Arise from Matter." So this is a whole mathematical treatise, and it shows that there's some information content in, say, in a particular thing. Like, you know, the design of this table would have some information content. There's a stand, it's vertical, it's got a light. So there's a simple complexity to it. So you can use this idea of information content and look at a living organism and see that there's a great amount of information content there. So it's the information content in a living organism, it's much, much, much greater than the information content in simple matter. So therefore, on that basis, life cannot come from matter, because where does the information come from? Similar to the answer to your question. There's no source of information for this complexity of life. Anyway, they don't have good arguments. They just have, you know, a lot of fanatical raising their voices and crying and, you know, screaming and calling names. It's basically what they do. But the science is good. The thing is, because it defeats their atheistic religion, they will not accept it. Oh yeah, another book was Tornado in a Junkyard, that the chances of developing a 747 from a tornado going through a junkyard it's easier to produce a working 747 jet plane from a tornado going through a junkyard than by the chance evolution of amino acids. As another one was Darwin on trial. Yeah, it was done by a lawyer who just applied the same arguments that would be used in a courtroom to the arguments, to defeat the arguments that were being made by the evolutionists. Hare Krishna. Sri Sri Panchatattva ki. Sri Sri Gauri Tanaki.